Jaya Radha Madhava Panjabi Hari Panjabi Hari Gopi Jana Bada Bhagiri Vada Dhari Gopi jana bhalla bhagiri vare jadi Yasoda nandana vraja jana ranjana Yasoda nandana braja jana ranjana Jamana tiravana chadi Jamana tiravana chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Kunja Vihari Gopi jana bala bhagiri vada dhari Gopi jana bala bhagiri vada dhari Yasoda nandana braja jana ranjana Yasoda nandana braja jana ranjana Yamuna tiravana chadi Jamana tiravana chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivirakacharya Divine grace is the Bhakti Vedanta Swami Jaya Prabhupada ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda ki Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Gaur Premanandi. There's an extra book here if somebody would like one. Extra. It's okay. No problem. If somebody wants, you can. Here, come take and give to somebody. You got your apron on. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mushnanto Yonya Chikyadin. Let's try it again. Mushnantom yonya chikshadim yatan arachcha chikshipoho tatat yascha punar doryad durad dasantash cha punar daduho Mushnanton yonyashik yadin Yatan arachcha chikshipoho Tratrat yashapunar dorad Dasantashcha punar dadoho Mushnanton yanya shikshadin Yatan arach chachikshipoho Tatastya shapunar dorad Dasantas chapunar dadoho Mushnanton yanya shikshadin Yadin Mushnanton yanya shikshadin Yatad arachcha chikshipoho Tatas yascha punar dorad Dasantascha punar dadoho Mushnanton yonyashik yadin Yatan arachcha chikshipoho Tatratrascha punar dorad Dasantascha punar dadoho Mushnanton yonya shikshadin Yatan arachcha chikshipoho Tatras yascha punar dorad Dasantascha punar dadoho Mushnantaha Stealing Anyonya From one another Shikya adin, lunch bags, and other belongings. Gyatan, having been understood by the proprietor of the bag. Arat chach, to a distant place. Chikshapohu. Threw away. Tatratyacha. Those who were in that place also. Punak dorat. Then again threw farther away. Hasanta cha punak dodohu. When they saw the proprietor, they threw it farther away and enjoying laughing when the owner sometimes cried, his bag was given to him again. Translation, all the cowherd boys used to steal one another's lunch bags When a boy came to understand that his bag had been taken away, the other boys would throw it farther away to a more distant place, and those standing there would throw it still farther. When the proprietor of the bag became disappointed, the other boys would laugh. The proprietor would cry, and then the bag would be returned. They steal in Goloka Vrindavan. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This kind of playing and stealing among boys still exists, even in the material world, because this kind of sporting pleasure is present in the spiritual world from which this idea of enjoyment emanates. Janmad yasya yataha. The same enjoyment is displayed by Krishna and his associates in the spiritual world. But there the enjoyment is eternal, whereas here on the material platform it is temporary. There the enjoyment is Brahman, whereas here the enjoyment is Jada. The Krishna consciousness movement is meant to train one how to transfer oneself from the Jada to the Brahman, because human life is meant for this purpose. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Look at that, he's got the first two Vedanta Sutra aphorisms. Krishna comes down to teach us how we can enjoy with him on the spiritual platform, in the spiritual world. Not only does he come, but he personally displays his pastimes in Vrindavan and attracts people to spiritual enjoyment. And the previous verse, text 4, has no purport. We'll read that. Although all these boys were already decorated by their mothers with ornaments of kacha, gunja, pearls, and gold, when they went into the forest, they further decorated themselves with fruits, green leaves, bunches of flowers, peacock feathers, and soft minerals. Dhatubihi. In the word for this verse, Sumana means individual flowers and Stavaka means bunches of flowers. So they did both. They gathered because they're lovers of Vrindavan, and in Vrindavan everything that there is very simple, at the same time more opulent, take it from Ramananda Roy, more opulent than Vaikuntha. You know that nice section from Chaitanya Charitamrita where Narada Muni, excuse me, Srivas sees the wonderful procession of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, going to command Jagannath to come back to the temple after having been away for some days. So she goes in great pomp and splendor and all opulence, and being an appreciator of the opulence of Vaikuntha, Narada Muni specifically, Srivas becomes so joyful and says, just see the opulence of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. The opulence of the goddess of fortune Lakshmi so much surpasses the opulence of Vrindavan. And he makes some funny noise. And Lord Chaitanya smiles and says, Shivas, you're Narada Muni, so there's no surprise that you have this appreciation. And he turns to his other associates and says, what do you have to say about this? The opulence of Vaikuntha, the opulence of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, surpasses the opulence of Vrindavan. And in one sense, simply summarizing, you know, those verses from Brahma Samhita that we recite, the last two at the end, Shriya Kanta. So he just repeats that message and some other ones, that there's not only one goddess of fortune, there's unlimited goddesses of fortune. And all the trees are wish-fulfilling trees, and all the cows are Surabhi cows, and the land is Chintamani, and the opulence of Vrindavan, you know, everything. Everything there is fully conscious and full of bliss, and the opulence is Vrindavan can't even be touched by the opulence of the goddess of fortune and the opulence of Vaikuntha. And Srivas is happy to be defeated. So although the appearance is of some things that are quite simple, in one sense they are quite simple, flowers, bunches of flowers, but the personality of Godhead, he appreciates more than jewels, because that's in the translation here. The mothers decorated them with money, pearls, svarna, gold, dhatu bhi, very soft and colorful minerals. They preferred things that were readily available, peacock feathers and things naturally found in Vrindavan. Why peacock feathers? Because peacock feathers remind them of Krishna. And so they like the peacock feathers more than they like the gold and jewels. They want just stimulate their love for Krishna. And the natural beauty that, you know, in this world, people, they have big, you know, urban developments, and naturally, at least well-planned urban developments have their places where there's parks, and where there's the parks, there's the attractiveness of nature. Just a little sharing from my visits to China. They really have this aesthetic. You know, there's these really awful my opinion anyways, awful developments, high rise, everything. You know, big, and so many of them, but they all have some, you know, vastu kind of arrangement for parks and streams and waterfalls and flowers and even along the highways. Not like India. And it's not like anywhere that I've ever been. You know, they long stretches, not just for the tourists when you approach the airport, so they think, oh, you know, that's in India. As you approach the airport, there's all these well-maintained gardens and things on both sides of the road. What do you call it? Horticulture and landscaping. And it's like, ooh, it's all over the place. No, there, it's not. There is the urban area, but on roadways, just out in the middle of wherever you are, it's part of how they, it's an aesthetic that they just live by. And it costs money to maintain those things and do those things. Anyway, Vrindavan is like that everywhere, particularly by the presence of Krishna. Everything became abundant. The trees and the everything, the vines, the everything, just by Krishna's presence. You know, I was told, I don't know if it's true, but I was told that the forests of Vrindavan were such that during Bhaktisiddhanta's time, to go from Vrindavan town to Govardhan Hill, the whole distance, you could not see the sun because there are so many trees. It was actually a forest. And then something happened. You know, greed came along and chop, 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 chop. I don't want to get too far away from the chapter 12 here, but there was this big effort, a literal fight for preserving the trees in Varsana. Radhanath Maharaj just narrated about this. And somebody, some sadhu, stood up to the basically the gangsters that wanted the trees for money and stood, you know, held them off and gathered support so the trees were maintained. But chop, chop, chop. Just take greed. Take resources of nature and turn it into rupees or, you know, money of whatever the place is. So this is the way of material life. And like during Krishna's presence, abundant opulence. And of course, the place, we know from the previous verse and purport, the place is fully spiritual. So that abundance is there naturally in the spiritual plane, which we can't access because of our dull senses. But when Krishna was present, even worldly people could experience. And certainly the cowherd boys aren't worldly people, they're transcendental personalities enjoying sporting activities with Krishna. The previous verse is describing the unlimited asankhyataha numbers of cows. Now it's got to be a limited number. But asankhyat, so sankhya means to count, and asankhyataha means too many to count. And just, there's a certain standard where when it becomes too many to count, then it becomes asankhyataha, too many to count. And that's the spiritual world. Now, certainly there had to be a finite number of cows, because at the end of the day, when the cows came back, Krishna would count the cows. And if there were cows missing, then he would call them by name because he had a personal relationship with each of the cows. But asankhyataha, and it's not just, as Prabhupada writes here, it's not mythology, it's the nature of the spiritual realm. So finite, at the same time infinite. Contradiction, right? Got to be something wrong here, right? But it's the capacity for Krishna to manifest all the calves and cowherd boys means his capacity is unlimited. You can't limit his capacity. So even limited, unlimited, or unlimited, limited, for Krishna, no problem. Then this verse, stealing. Well, stealing is
immoral in any culture, in any country, in any religion. Stealing is immoral and illegal, punishable. Now, this is children's play, so they're not literally stealing. It's children's play. And, you know, somebody might say, you know, your children shouldn't steal because it teaches them the wrong thing. But these are cowherd boys they're playing. And it's for stimulating ecstatic love with Krishna at the center. So the beginning text, there's seven verses in a row that are just the playful activities all leading up to Krishna's killing of the Agasura demon. So Prabhupada would say sometimes, when the cowherd boys went out to herd the calves and the cows later, they weren't really herding the calves and the cows. They were just playing. Because the calves or the cows were so attached to Krishna, they just followed along wherever they went. So they really have to pay attention. I mean, they were paying attention, but they were just playing. That's all. The cowherd boys were having a great time. And the calves and the cows, they were having a great time too. And so that these seven verses in a row, it's just they're samples of their types of activities together. Playful. So the stealing was playful. And as Prabhupada explains, this is the main point of the purport, is these same activities are found here. Sometimes, you know, sometimes bullies will do thing where they really just want to torment somebody. But other than that, sometimes amongst friends they'll do these things. And you know, the desired response from the one who has his thing stolen is to go chase after it, and then they throw it further away. There's this beautiful painting, I'm sure many of you have seen, where the one who has his lunch stolen is Madhu Mangal, shown in the painting. And he's reaching out with his arms, and the boys are laughing, and they throw the lunch to somebody else, and he runs after the somebody else, and then they throw it to somebody else. Here specifically it says they throw it further away and further away and further away. A comment from Jiva Goswami is a little different than what Prabhupada has written here, and in the verse and purport, the translation and the purport. And Vishwanath also says the same as Prabhupada, but Jiva Goswami says I don't know what the word in Sanskrit here is, shikya, but apparently it means lunches, and or lunch bag or something. Jiva Goswami says they didn't steal their food because that would be, you know, an offense, steal another boy's food. But it was the sticks and, you know, the paraphernalia related to, you know, their activities for the day. And so that's what was stolen, not the lunch. But anyway, stealing their lunch, stealing their paraphernalia and other belongings. Adin, shikya, adin. So their belongings, and tossing it here and there. And so these playful activities will sometimes go on in this world. Of course, there's the distortion, the tamagun and rajagun abuse of playfulness, but boys are boys, and boys will be playful, and sometimes this is one of the playful activities. So the message that Prabhupada wants us to receive in the purport here is These are Brahman activities or eternal activities where the pleasure isn't temporary. So one can argue, as people will sometimes do, hey, you know, I see people that are materialists, they're having pleasure, they're having fun, they're enjoying. And then, you know, what are we supposed to say? Well, the pleasure that they're experiencing, one of the things is, specifically in the purport, that pleasure which they're having, it's of the temporary nature. And then following that temporary pleasure comes suffering. There's something about senses contacting sense objects that keeps people chasing after it. There's something, there's an experience. And that experience, you know, through the sense organs, there's some pleasure, some sound, some taste, some touch, some sight. There's something, there's a buzz that keeps the senses going for those sense objects. So it's not, in one sense, it's not a zero, it's something. But that something is an illusion. It's not what real happiness is, and therefore it's illusion. And it's the illusion of Maya that keeps one chasing after the pleasure of the senses and the sense objects. So whatever that sensation is, the happiness of worldly boys that are playful and stealing something, and then the boy starts to cry, and then they give the thing back, and they laugh, and they hug one another, and it was just fun. So that playfulness of childhood is something that's manifest in childhood. So what's the difference? Or what's the big deal? Or, you know, why is this in the Bhagavatam? What's of interest to Shukadeva Goswami to narrate this? He's narrating this. And he's not interested in anything material because of its transcendental nature. And therefore, as Prabhupada says, Krishna appears in this world to attract us to the eternal happiness. Looks like, but it's not the same as, qualitatively, it's not the same as material happiness, although it looks like. And that means there's potencies invested within this message of Srimad Bhagavatam that stimulate ecstatic love that's not found in hearing Harry Potter or, you know, children in children's books that are playing and doing playful things, and or they do with one another that looks like what's narrated in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's qualitatively different. There's no such potency within material activities to stimulate ecstatic love. So Krishna appears. And the Bhagavatam later appears to stimulate ecstatic love, although it may look like and it may sound like something that's material. There's pleasure here and there's pleasure there, but there's a difference, qualitative difference in that pleasure. And there's a qualitative difference in that the sound and the form and the activities. A beginning place for us is, well, these two things. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and the qualitative difference between the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and any other sound vibration. And people that are worldly in consciousness can become spiritualized through mantra. I've been having a great time listening to daily, several times a day, listening to Prabhupada's recorded lectures going back to, you know, way long ago, and sequentially, especially, well, not only especially in India, where audiences and CDs of Western American and European boys who previously were addicted, but he would say also to American college students, because there are several recordings I've been hearing where he's speaking at Ohio State and here and there, and the process is effective. The process, so, you know, who to appeal, please try to understand, please take part, please join us, please become happy through the chanting of Hare Krishna, and for understanding, your educated young people, and so we have so many books, this book, that book, the other book, so that you can understand how the process works, try to understand Krishna, and it begins with the chant. So the sound vibration, it has a practical effect, and he would point to the devotees that they were previously engaged in all kinds of sinful things. And now they're no longer doing those sinful things. And if they were asked to do those sinful things, they would say no. And I haven't bribed them. I don't have money. They're doing because they're experiencing something. And that experiencing something is param drishtva nivartate. It's a higher taste. So, you know, devotees are rare. Devotees are rare. There's no expectation. We'll say it reverse. There's a clear understanding that not everyone's going to become a devotee. Say it negatively. There's not an expectation that everyone's going to become a devotee. It's like, you know, it's right in Bhagavad Gita. Manusha nam sahasreshu kastud yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhan. And this siddhi is to wanting to know who you are. Most people are too busy with sense gratification to even ask the question. So, and those that are asking the question, they may come to realize their identity as Brahman. How many become devotees? It's rare. So the transformation experience and potency of the sound vibration process is profound. But even exposed to that sound vibration, how many people are going to take shelter of it? There's a whole lot of other sound vibration going on out there that's of a different kind. So there's a lot of opposition to purification. However, propagate the sound vibration through kirtan and recorded material and books and etc., etc. The patan, yajan, yajan, dan, pratigraha. The effect of this sound vibration is one becomes qualified. Although previously unqualified, one becomes qualified, and one of the things that a qualified person does is they teach others. It's a very simple program, very straightforward. Hear, chant, be happy, and then give that happiness to others through the same method, by sound vibration, by preaching. That's the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan. So here we are, hearing Srila Prabhupada in his transcendental purport, guiding us through the sound vibration so we can appreciate what's the purpose of this is to connect us with our original happiness. Although it may, by worldly measure, look quite similar to, even the same as, the worldly kind. Boys playing. So how many adults are really like, hey, let's hear about children's play. But here we are. assembled together hearing about children's play, because it stimulates ecstatic love for Krishna. Potency is invested in the Srimad Bhagavatam like that. So let's see if there's some discussion. Or questions? Anyone? Sorry for the abrupt ending. We have a question up front. You always have something.
To clarify, thank you for your class, Maharaj, but you were mentioning in a purport, Jiva Goswami said, I think it was Jiva Goswami said.
Jiva, yeah. And it wasn't lunches, it was paraphernalia.
He didn't steal the lunch, he stole the paraphernalia. That's what you said, right?
Yeah, he lists some of the paraphernalia categories.
Okay. The reason I appreciated that comment, because we hear usually that another name for the Lord is Hari, he who takes away or steals.
Yeah.
And we see there's so many pastimes where the Lord will steal our accessories, but not our necessities, feeding our mind with Krishna consciousness. And my question is related to one quote.
Well, Krishna can take necessities also, apparently. Because necessities, if the boy doesn't have his lunch, he's not going to croak.
If the boy doesn't have his lunch?
If he misses lunch one day, he's not going to die. Mm-hmm. Not a necessity in that sense. And, some devotees may undergo some hardship somehow. I know some devotees undergoing hardship. Not only their physical, but other, hardships. But I appreciate your point.
My comment is related to a nice quote. It says, contentment comes from wanting what we need, not needing what we want. So my question is, how do we know whether or not we're abusing the yukta?
How do we know what?
How do we know whether we're abusing the yukta vairagya philosophy?
Well, how much are you thinking of Krishna as the barometer? If you're doing vairagya and it results in forgetting Krishna, then it's not the right. Then it's misusing the principle. And if you're using yukta and it takes one away from remembrance of Krishna, it's not proper application of the principle. So we don't imitate, we need to engage in the yukta vairagya principle such that yena tena pakarena manak krishne navesha. Yet we can think of Krishna more. And we may need to recalibrate what our yukta and vairagya capacity is based upon how well we're remembering Krishna. Others? Subal is churning something over there. Yes?
One thing that you mentioned that sort of had my mind going to it was the appreciation of aesthetics and of yourself seeing the aesthetics in China, and also commenting, making the point for the aesthetics of Vrindavan and Vaikuntha. And I was just thinking, for Westerners, aesthetics is something that creates attraction. I'm trying to make the questions because there's, Prabhupada also mentioned that you make these beautiful temples for attracting people.
Sure.
How much importance we have to put in that in terms of you know, not making it too much focus on the external part, that you create, like materialistic people create a lot of beautiful aesthetic
Your question is similar to the previous question, and how much is based upon attracting the hearts and the minds toward Krishna. And, you know, it's both from the persons who's creating the temple and the appreciation of the persons who come to the temple. They just appreciate the architecture or the this or the that of the temple, the opulence of the temple, they miss the boat. You know, decorating the deity for the pleasure of the deity. We make it's not important, and it's important at the same time. Prabhupada wanted temples to be nice. He wanted them to be comfortable. Most importantly, he wanted them to be clean, even if it's something that's very simple. Clean. That's really important, because naturally a place that's clean is inviting for the mode of goodness person. You know, a mode of ignorance person will make something clean dirty just because that's what's comfortable for them. So your question specifically is how important it's, you know, from the persons who are creating the temple or the persons who are visiting the temple, let it be done, let the purpose be to remember Krishna. So, like, deity, opulent deity worship, some people come just because they like how opulently we worship the deities. They don't really understand, you know, the number of artis and offerings a day, and that's not like an opulence for them. It's, you know, the decorations or the chandelier or, you know, some material opulence. So it goes both ways. How important. Okay, we're done. Could you, want somebody, ask Gokuleshwara, request him if he would give class tomorrow morning. He's going to be here, right? He just took off. It'd be nice to hear from him. He'll say, oh, I want to hear Mara speak. We want to hear him speak. Oh, is he right there? Hey, Gokuleshwara. This is a personal request. Can you please give Srimad Bhagavatam class tomorrow morning? Can you kindly prepare for Srimad Bhagavatam class tomorrow morning? Thank you very much. Nice devotee. I don't know if you met him yet. From Juhu, he does a ton of service in Juhu. I know him from specifically when there's meetings and gatherings. He's the go-to person that arranges everybody's everything, their accommodation, the airport pickup, this and that and the other thing. And he's got a team of people, but he just loves serving the Vaishnavas. And I mean, that's how I know him. I don't know so many other things. I know that one. He's very efficient and very personable, very kind, very prompt. You know, like you just feel like, I can't wait till the next time I go to Bombay, because I know I'll be taken care of. He has his team, he has staff or whatever. So he's going to be, gets a little break from everything, come to America and visit a few places. And for some reason, I don't know why, you chose to come to Chicago first. I'm sure he'll be jet lagged out for a bit this afternoon, like I will also. Yeah. So have a nice stay while you're here. Make him feel welcome. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.